You take someone serious with dignity and you throw a pie at them and it's much funnier. And GTA is that much more serious person and you are throwing pies at it.
This is Up Up Down Down, the world's funniest show about the craft of video games. I'm Alan Pike. Joining us today is Nigel Brook, a 15-year veteran of the games industry, having worked for Radical Entertainment, later Activision, and is now co-founder of Steam Clock Software. Hi, Nigel.
Hello.
We're also happy to have Curtis Lassum. Curtis is simultaneously a software developer, gamer, and the artist behind the webcomic and video series Cube Drone. Hi, Curtis.
Hello.
How are you doing today?
I am doing pretty good.
That's excellent. So our topic today is humor in games, when it works, when it doesn't, and how to make a game that actually is funny. And I suspected that this is a topic that would be a really good match for having Curtis on the show, and I was verified when you've produced more than three times as much notes as any previous guest that we've had so far about
it. Hooray!
I think you also produced double the amount of notes that you did.
Yes.
Which is also extremely unusual.
Including the sponsor read and the guest interest and everything, which is exciting. So I'm looking forward to this one. So in preparation for this episode, I figured I would go back to the roots of the classics of humor gaming. And last episode, you, Nigel, and Nevin Mergen were talking a fair bit, or, you know, for a couple minutes about Monkey Island. And this is a game that I'm always ashamed to admit or avoid admitting that I've never played before. So I downloaded it on the iPad and tried it out. And I got to admit, it was pretty hard to play. Like, with my modern sensibility and attention span, like, okay, what do I do? What do I click? Where do I go? But I was kind of sad. I was expecting to just be like busting a gut. But then I watched the trailer for Goat Simulator and I was crying laughing. So it kind of balanced out.
I feel like I've had that same experience with Monkey Island. I booted it up one time. I kind of expected, you know, the greatest comedy game of all time because it's been so hyped up. And then I spent literally like 15 minutes taking every single item in my inventory and clicking on every single item in the room I was in until, and spoilers, this is a very old game, so it shouldn't really be spoilers, but I used a wedding ring to cut a hole in a ship so that I could get out of that ship. And after that, I had decided that maybe this game was not the sort of game that I actually wanted to play.
I mean, I imagine there's like a video, like watch the video of the game that you don't have to spend the time going and get like maybe the best of clips or moments or something like that. I'm not sure if it would still be as funny. I don't know, Nigel, what's your take on its applicability to sort of the modern genre?
Well, there's kind of two separate issues there, right? Because the humor of Monkey Island is sort of separate from the issue of it being from the old school adventure game, you know, MO of, yeah, use every item in your inventory with every other item in your inventory until something clicks and have just totally nonsensical puzzles
combinations and
combinations and stuff like that. And it definitely does suffer from that. Like, it's easy to not enjoy that game if you try and legitimately solve those puzzles. Like, even when I replayed the game on the iPad, even having played it before on the PC, I just had like the walkthrough open in a Safari window, and just anytime I got the least bit stuck, I just looked up what's next. Cause having been through it the first time, banging my head against that stuff, I just knew there was going to be puzzles that I wouldn't be able to figure out, and that, you know, a walkthrough is kind of the only solution for that. I don't know how I ever finished that game back pre-internet when you couldn't just do that. Like, I didn't buy a hint book or anything like that. I just, every single one of those puzzles, I banged my head against it until I made it work. And that was, you know, that was the style in those days. Like, people didn't get as annoyed by that as they do now. And But that's sort of an independent issue from the humor of it. Like, I think the humor can be diffused a little bit if the gameplay just kind of bogs you down. But some of the humor comes out of those weird combinations, I find. Like, once you do the thing, then something incongruous happens, and that's usually pretty funny.
It's funny
but it's less
it's
funny
unexpected.
if you yeah, it's funny because it's unexpected. It's less funny if it took you 15 minutes to figure out what to do to get that to happen, which is, like I said, why I wouldn't entirely recommend trying to play the game legitimately. It's just from a different era, you know?
I would also recommend not trying to play it while looking up the walkthroughs, because every time, I mean, I didn't realize this until after I bought it and it was crashing and the autosaves weren't working, that the iPad version of the game came out when the iPad did and then hasn't been really updated since then. So it's not exactly surprising that it does not work correctly anymore. But anytime I would multitask, which when the iPad came out, was not exactly a thing.
That actually surprises me a little bit, not to like do tech support on Monkey Island on the iPad on the air here, but Sam was just playing, or maybe it was Monkey Island 2 he was playing the other day that he wasn't having any problems with. So it's definitely not like totally incompatible with modern iPads or anything.
Yeah, I mean, it ran fine. It was just the saving and loading and backgrounding and forwarding that wasn't working.
I was going to say, the Monkey Island games have a long history of being ignored by their developers well past their release dates.
It's tradition. So you talked a little bit about things being unexpected and that being what's funny in the game. And something that's interesting to me, started deconstructing what makes a funny game is, and Curtis actually did an awesome job of picking out some of these specific things with like the sources of humor. And for me, one of the things that I do find really funny is when something unexpected happens. In general, whether it's, the plot has something unexpected or something unexpected is possible. And for me, like the kind of origins of, if I think back, like the most, like my kind of original moments where I was just crying, laughing, and this was so funny, were actually at games that I was playing, probably on Super Nintendo, actually really more it was the N64 era, because that's when you got to 3D open world games where bizarre, insane, game-breaking bugs were possible. And you could start to get in circumstances where you actually, like, we had a racing game and we got stuck on a wall and the car is, like, sort of sliding vertically on the wall and, like, clipping through the wall and stuff like that, which, you know, when you're, like, 13 is pretty funny. But that category of insanity actually has become recently a type of game that you can get on Steam. We have Octodad, which have either of you guys played Octodad yet?
I've seen the previews for Octodad, and I can totally see where the humor is in Octodad. It's sort of a quap sort of humor where you're just given a game that's so difficult to play, and you're given so much freedom in that game, but you can't use it effectively, so you just sort of stumble around, ramming into walls and completely failing at any task you're handed. And there's a lot of humor in that, because every interaction is an unexpected interaction.
Even if you're like, I'm going to do this, and then your character does something different, which sort of violates the rules of making a fun game. But if the unexpected thing is more entertaining than what you intended to do, then that's fun. For anyone who hasn't seen Quap, I'll put a link in to it. It's a very challenging racing game, running, sprinting game, where every keyboard button controls a different joint, I guess, of your body. It's definitely worth playing as far as the very, very simple but humorous game. Another game in that category, as far as like kind of almost the purposely bad gameplay, is the Surgeon Simulator, which I'm not sure if either of you have played.
Yeah, I've played a little bit of that, and the other one that you mentioned in the notes here, which is EnviroBear 2000. I find those not the very appealing to me from a humor standpoint. Like, they're, you know, to me, they're kind of like pun level of humor, right? Is you play them a little bit and you're like, oh, yeah, okay.
It's this kind of game.
What's going on here? And then it's kind of over. I think the games that work better for that kind of stuff for me are the ones where the gameplay is sufficiently over the top. It's not that it's bad. It's just that, like, crazy things happen. Like, the Grand Theft Auto games are a great example of that, where you just, like, all sorts of crazy things can happen and you get a 5-star rating and the cops are just on you constantly and you're standing in the middle of the street with a rocket launcher just blowing stuff away. And like that, it reaches this fever pitch that becomes really funny, but the gameplay's still good. Whereas stuff like Surgeon Simulator and EnviroBear, it seems to be wanting to create that crazy, you don't know what is going on chaos, but instead of doing it by making things over the top. It's just doing it by making them hard, which I don't find that very appealing. Like, I, you know, I understand the appeal. Like, you look at the trailers of those and you're like, haha, yeah, that's pretty funny. But it seems pretty one trick pony to me. Whereas something where the humor genuinely comes out of insane situations that you create is a lot more, it's a lot more natural. Just Cause, there's another great example. Or I haven't played much of it, but the Saints Row series, right? You were talking about that a couple episodes ago, that just how over the top and crazy the setup, particularly for Saints Row 4, is.
So would you echo that, Curtis, that the sort of being purposely bad is the low form of comedy in games?
I wouldn't say it's a low form of comedy. It's its own form of comedy. Like, it is, it's a way to make a comedy game. It's not a way to make a fun game. Like, the people's interactions with that game are going to generate comedic moments, lots of comedic moments. It'll be funny, but people aren't going to enjoy playing Quap. I hate Quap. I hate playing Quap. It is the worst game I've encountered in a long time. I find it extremely frustrating, and I don't enjoy playing it, but I do think that watching people playing Quap is very funny. And so it's a humorous game, but it's not a good game. And that's an important distinction to make.
Yeah, I think I found the exact same. The reason I have fond memories of Surgeon Simulator is because I happened to download it when my brother was over. And so we took turns failing horribly. And the other person's like, no, what are you doing? Like, and of course, because the failure modes in it are so spectacular, like, you know, pretty quickly, the radio that was sitting on the table is like in the guy's stomach. And like, you know, everything is just going horrible, like way wrong, more wrong than it could practically happen in an actual surgery that really went badly. But, you know, we're also spending time like laughing and like, we can't believe how badly the other person is doing it. Like, no, give me the controls. I can do it better. And of course we can't. Whereas Quap is kind of the same thing.
I was going to say, I find that one of the things that an example of that sort of game that a lot of people don't think about is Worms, actually, because the gameplay from Worms is very familiar to all of us. It's that old Gorillas.bas QBasic game where you pick a direction and then you pick a power and you lob some opponent, lob some weapon at your opponent and something bad happens to them. Like, it's a very simple game. What makes Worms a memorable and fun experience is that the difficulty is ramped way up. If you make even a little error, you're going to knock your worm off of a cliff, or you're going to accidentally blow up a hole that a mine falls into and kills half of your team. Like, they've made it a funnier game by making it much more difficult, but in a way that sort of organically creates funny moments. And I think that's a strong point of the game. And in fact, like, Worms is fun. It's fun in a way that Octodad isn't.
Because Worms is mostly played multiplayer, isn't it? I haven't really played it.
Worms is almost entirely multiplayer. I mean, I'm sure people play it single player, but those people are lonely and should feel sad.
So that, I think that's part of what makes it work then, is that like the hilarity is built in the, at the very least, if something really, and it actually works even better, if there's four people playing, if something horrible happens to one of the four people, it's funny to three people, right? Three quarters of the time you're laughing when something horrible happens to someone. And even games like Mario Party have moments of that where, like, you know, someone just gets eaten by a Gru for no good reason, but it's funny to three of the four people.
I would say in Worms, it's often even funny to the person that it happens to, because you don't get the feeling in Worms that, I don't know what the right way to phrase this is. Any game like that, you feel like you could have done the right thing, right? Like, the right thing was there and you just slightly failed to execute it, and the consequences that happened were way out of proportion with how bad the mistake you made was. But you feel like, yeah, okay, I should have seen that when that thing split apart, that this stuff was going to bounce here and everything was going to just go to hell. And it can all happen to the other people too, and probably will when it's their turn to shoot, right? So it's got the same thing as like the, you know, the GTA Just Cause kind of stuff I was talking about before, of you've got this chaos just building and building and building, and eventually something goes horribly wrong, and things going horribly wrong are almost always funny. But it happens very organically in those games. It's an outgrowth of the fact that the gameplay is extreme and that it causes all these crazy effects when things go wrong.
Crazy consequences from extreme gameplay, like, that makes a funny thread through almost any complex game, right? Like if you look at something like Dwarf Fortress, which I haven't really played, but I've read enough of that, I think of it as funny because someone invested 300 hours building this ridiculous fortress with, you know, 18 levels and various smelting, you know, things. But then when, and you know, a demon managed to get into the smelter and lava's flowing everywhere and ridiculous things are happening, it's funny just due to the, you know, sort of complete anarchy you can have in a system that's that complicated that you can never predict what would actually happen.
That's definitely the source of fun in games that's kind of different from other forms of entertainment. Like a lot of the other kinds of humor that you get in games are very much the same sort of thing you get in film or TV or novels or whatever. Whereas I think that that sense of chaos is kind of unique to games, because part of what makes it funny is how unplanned and how over the top it is. You know, maybe the only sort of other art form that you can draw inspiration from in how that stuff works is like improv comedy, right? Which also depends on, you know, sort of people juggling stuff and seeing how many balls they can keep in the air at the same time and just keep adding more balls until finally, you know, everything just falls over.
Yeah, I think if you just, like, a lot of people say that you know, comedy is not a genre of video game, or at least it's not a popular genre of video game, but I almost feel like it doesn't need to be, because if you give people a sufficiently complicated simulation, which means anything with physics, or anything like Dwarf Fortress, or, Garry's Mod, which is bad physics, like, if you just give people a significantly complicated simulation, they'll find ways to manufacture their own humor, and the humor that they manufacture will be more funny to them than anything you could have written into the story.
You put into the notes here, Dwarf Fortress Boat Murdered, which makes me curious. I don't know what that is.
So Boat Murdered is it's a story. So a big group of people took a Dwarf Fortress save file, and they'd play it for a year, and then they'd pass it to the next person in the chain. And after they played that game for a year, they would write a long and comprehensive story pretending to have been a temporary, commander of that fortress, describing the many, many strange occurrences that happened over the time that they spent in their fortress. So it's very, very funny. And all of this humor, it certainly wasn't planned by the people who made the game. It's humor that sort of rose organically from a group of people coming together and just noticing when they came into this fortress, like, hey, the main hall is only 2 squares wide, so nothing is happening in this fortress, and so now I need to fix it because ridiculous things are happening here, here, and here. Describing them and then contextualizing them in the universe that's been presented to them, which I thought was wonderful humor, but it was wonderful humor that wasn't produced by the people who made the game. It was produced by the people who were playing the game, which is often funnier.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, it's sort of in the same lines as any open world game that you will have. Like, I've had some really fun moments in Skyrim just doing things that you would never expect. You know, like, there's a certain humor in trying something. You're like, would it let me steal this? Because it seems really integral to the plot. Or, like, and then, yeah, sure enough, you just ruin the whole plot, and then you get banned from the town, and you can never go back. It's just like, it's funny enough to be worth it, or you load the saved game. But so you guys both mentioned sort of this idea that comedy is not as popular a genre in games as it is in film and TV. And that's interesting to me because I'm always, not always, but I think about this contrast in between film and TV, which are sort of the established sources of media that people tell stories in, and then games, which is this sort of up-and-coming genre or medium where people are trying to tell stories. And so if you look at especially TV, like, I don't know, I would say maybe the majority of TV shows are comedies, at least maybe historically.
Maybe not right now, though. Dramas are big,
yeah,
right now.
True,
right?
But there's still a lot of TV shows where comedy is like a major part, like it's kind of the point of it. Whereas in games, there's like, if a game is mostly notable for being funny, especially if it's mostly funny, like notable for having a funny story, that's very unusual. As like the ones that are notable for being funny are like Co-op or Goat Simulator, where it's like a ridiculous game, but not like a game that has a funny story or funny characters or dialogue necessarily as the sort of catching the sort of selling point for the game. Do you guys think that that's a temporary thing that eventually that will come about in games, or do you think that that's sort of a restriction of the format?
I think it's a restriction of the format. I think that there's too many things in the way that gameplay works that work to diffuse the ordinary tools of comedy, that some things you need to be able to set up comedy in a narrative environment you just don't really have in video games. So, I mean, huge amounts of comedy are dependent on timing, and it's hard to control timing if the user is in control of the flow of the game, right? You're restricted to doing really timing dependent gags in cutscenes, and cutscenes are something that are, you know, they're kind of a problem in games anyways, that, you know, players, except for a few genres, like, you know, people that play Final Fantasy and stuff like that, for the most part, gamers looking at really long cutscenes as a bit of a failure, right? They don't want to sit and watch it forever. And comedy writing's hard. Like, it's actually a lot harder than drama writing. So if you put in cutscenes and it goes badly, then it's going to really just, the whole thing is going to fall flat. But yeah, I mean, there's just so many things in games that really diffuse the potential of comedy. You know, jokes usually aren't funny when they're repeated. If you have a joke that is integrated into gameplay in some way, and then you have to see it five times because you have to replay that section five times, or you see it every time that thing gets deployed, then it's just not funny anymore. And even if it was funny the first time, by the time you've seen it the 10th time, it probably seems like it wasn't ever funny. Like, you don't even remember that you had a little chuckle at that the first time you saw it. So yeah, I think there are some limitations of the format that you just can't deploy the regular tools of comedy well in a game.
At the same time, though, there's a lot of tools of comedy that have been used effectively in games. And I feel like Valve especially has done a lot of really key work in driving forward comedy in games. They learned how to deliver a solid narrative in their Half-Life games. And then they took those same techniques and they applied them in Portal and Team Fortress 2 in order to deliver solid humor. I mean, admittedly, it's pretty simple to say, okay, just have the player play the level and we'll belt jokes at them. But at the same time, I've played a lot of games where it's not handled nearly as cleverly as it is in Portal. In Magicka, for example, it's a game where they'll just break the flow of the entire game and tell you a bad joke. And I mean, the jokes weren't that well written in the first place, but after you've sat through that joke and the pause in gameplay for minutes at a time, every single time, it's not minutes, it's seconds, but you know what I mean.
It feels like minutes.
It feels like minutes. You're like, no, stop telling this joke. I know, please, just don't do this to me again. It's terrible. Whereas at least in Portal, it doesn't interrupt the flow of the game. Team Fortress 2 did it a lot in expanding the universe of the game beyond the game itself. I found actually that what drew me to Team Fortress 2 in the first place was the comedic nature of the universe. I mean, everything was bright and cartoony. The characters had like distinct, interesting, and hilarious personalities. But none of that really comes through in the gameplay. The gameplay actually feels very serious and focused, and not nearly as ridiculous as it would seem on the box. Where they actually build a lot of that humor is in like peripheral stuff that adds to the game without necessarily being part of it. Things like the comics, things like the backstory, sound bites that are even like super rare in the game, but you can hunt them down on your own time. And there's just a lot of hilarious stuff built around the game that makes the world of the game much funnier without actually interfering with the gameplay itself.
And the series of videos they did to introduce the different characters were comedic, even though the characters don't necessarily do comedic things in multiplayer.
Exactly. And those things, I mean, I feel like just about everybody who's played Team Fortress 2 has watched those shorts. Like, that information is still part of the game, even if it isn't technically included in the executable game. It's part of the universe that the game inhabits. And it's a really funny universe that the game inhabits, even if the game itself is dead serious. And when you're playing it, you're not thinking, oh, this is a funny moment in the game. You're thinking, I have to get behind that guy so I can stab him without him noticing me. Like, it's a very serious and not humorous feel to the gameplay. But the universe itself is hilarious, and they've built it out really well.
That actually makes a lot of sense if you know the history of the game, which was originally, like, if the first Team Fortress 2 was, like, themed as a military-style thing with everyone's in camo and takes itself very seriously, and then they ended up throwing it away and redoing it with the current style. So the gameplay is the sort of shooter team tactical gameplay that you like, but then also they have this layer on top that's fun and funny, which is awesome.
There's definitely good ways to do comedy in games, but a lot of times you end up having to not necessarily structure the gameplay around the comedy, but at least make allowances in the gameplay for the fact that there's going to be comedy. One of the reasons that, you know, like Monkey Island that we talked about earlier is an obvious example to use when you're talking about this stuff, is that it's a lot easier to do comedy in adventure games, because adventure games, for example, at least the LucasArts ones that Monkey Island is, don't have some of those problems because of the structure of the gameplay, right? Like I said, oh, repetition is a good way to kill comedy. Well, those adventure games, there's never any need to backtrack on the plot, right? It, like, the whole plot is just kind of a ratchet that each time you do a thing that advances you, you know, one more tooth on the wheel of the plot, you never have to go back. There's no failure condition that requires you to replay a section. So they can do a joke and not have to worry that you're going to have to see that joke again. And that gives them, you know, a power to do a little bit more comedy writing. Portal's got some of that going for it as well. I mean, you can die in Portal, but your backtracking is always limited to just the current test chamber. And for a good chunk of the game, it's actually fairly difficult to die much in most of the test chambers, right? So you don't end up replaying the same content over and over again.
Games have learned, obviously, people who've been writing games have learned that interrupting people to give them comedy, especially repeatedly, is going to be frustrating. And that's one innovation like Portal started with, not that they're the first game ever to do this necessarily, but with this idea that you're walking around, you're doing the thing you're doing, but there's a PA system of someone taunting you, which sounds not fun, right? Like, hey, we're going to have this game where you're doing these things and someone's just going to make fun of you the entire time. But actually, it's a perfect way to deliver well-written comedy that doesn't depend on the actions and the timing of what you're doing. And then in Portal 2, they went even further with that, with like the recordings of J.K. Simmons, what was his, the crazy inventor guy?
Cave Johnson.
And that kind of stuff, which was perfect. But games have also been exploring this with this sort of meme that's, I guess, Bioshock. The first Bioshock is the first game that I can think of that did this, but it probably wasn't the first game ever that did that. You find audio recordings. And now in every fantasy world in any game, there's like audio recordings just laying around everywhere that are perfectly in a certain order. But that's a good avenue for comedy, although I haven't seen it used that well for it, but it could easily be like that's where the funny parts is the audio recordings that reveal the backstory.
One of my absolute favorite games for funny, which we talked about a little bit last episode, not in the context of funny, but it's also a really funny game, is the No One Lives Forever series. It's really well written from a comedy standpoint, and they, even though it's a shooter, so you have all those issues of of having things diffuse the comedy beats, they do something really kind of clever with the way that they structure it, that if you play it as an ordinary shooter, you won't really see the comedy. The comedy's kind of a reward for successfully stealthing sections, because most of the comedy is in the incidental dialogue between NPCs, right, before you kill them. And so the clever thing with that is, if you don't want to repeat a comedy beat, you can always interrupt any of the comedy beats and murder the people doing the funny.
that are annoying you.
And, which is good. And there's this aspect of it encourages a stealthy style of play because you get rewarded by getting the little comedy snippets. And so that's always been one of my favorite examples of like a good way to dole out the comedy that kind of puts it under the user's control, right? Where you never have to listen to any of those comedy bits if you don't want to. You can always just push through and interrupt it and, you know, like I said, kill the people that are.
But a lot of this is stuff that would actually just be considered like good narrative development in games too. I mean, the rules for building funny comedy in games are like just right alongside the rules for building good narrative into a game, because you don't want to interrupt people to tell them important parts of story either. Like, you don't want to have, you know, a person sitting through the same cutscene explaining what's happening 8 times in the same way that you don't want to do that with a funny joke. You know, like, Bastion is an example of a game that is not funny at all, but it uses the same, you know, that portal thing where someone is just yelling at you the entire time the story, and it works because it's not intrusive. It doesn't interfere with the gameplay. It just quietly adds to it, well, loudly adds to it as you're playing without getting in your way, without interfering with the gameplay. It just sort of layers story on top of what you're doing. And you can do the same thing with humor. And in fact, you can interleave the humor and the story as you go. It's just part of like a well-crafted narrative experience in a lot of these games.
I think narrative's a little harder to make optional than comedy in that usually you need to encourage people to stick with the narrative because otherwise they just won't get what's going on. Whereas the comedy beats are usually pretty disposable. Like, it rarely is that stuff, you know, the incidental dialogue that you overhear or some little funny gag or something like that. Like, that's usually not essential. Whereas they don't want to, you know, if you're going to skip story, they want to give you a obvious way that you know you're skipping it and you're making the choice, like the old hold down the X button during the cutscene to skip it, because I've seen it before, I don't want to see it again. Or something like the no one lives forever technique of just like, anytime you get bored with a comedy conversation, you can cut it short. You wouldn't really want to do something like that with narrative, because it would be too easy for people to just blow past important chunks of narrative without even realizing that they were, right?
It's true. I'd say I know a lot of people who are perfectly willing to just go, oh, they're talking, I'm going to go make myself a sandwich, and then I'm going to come back to play the video game. But that's just people, like, intentionally avoiding the narrative. When I'm talking about narrative, though, I'm not talking about, like, the core narrative describing what you're doing in the game. I just mean, like, universe building, world building, a lot of the side stuff that happens in the game that's not as important, like the recordings in Skyrim or the recordings in Bioshock or the recordings that just sort of appear around the universe. They're there to develop the universe, but a lot of people will just ignore them because they don't care.
Yeah, definitely. That's a important technique for world backstory. I was thinking of it more in the sense of like the story, but yeah, world backstory off and like ignorable audio logs and documents and stuff like that is fantastic.
It's easy to get that wrong though. Like, Assassin's Creed 4 thought they were being clever when they're like, okay, we're going to give you narrative and backstory in the conversation the two people are having when you have to stalk them and follow them around in these like, eavesdropping missions. But the problem is that then, like, either the eavesdropping mission is so easy that it's kind of like just an annoying cutscene, or it's hard enough that you're not paying attention to what they're saying, which was the case for me. Like, I was like, whatever conversation they're having, you'd think I would get sick of it doing it 4 or 5 times and dying, but actually I wasn't even paying attention because I was staying as far away from them as possible. I was in this stealth mode, so it mutes their, like, it, you know, dampens what people are saying, and I'm just not paying attention to it because I'm trying to not die.
Yeah, you definitely want to clearly telegraph which mode you're in with that stuff. Like, it's always annoying if you can't tell. And most of the, like, you know, RPG games or shooter type games with like simulation or RPG elements have developed a real language with that, right? Of, if it's important, we'll put it in a cutscene. If it's some random audio log or some random piece of paper that you found lying on the ground, you can more or less always ignore those and never miss anything that you're going to need to know. And like all of them, you know, the various System Shock games, BioShock, Deus Ex, like all of those games follow that convention pretty rigorously of letting you know what you can ignore and not. And yeah, when a game kind of breaks the rules that way, it can be irritating.
All right, I want to do a sponsor, and then I'm curious to talk about like unsuccessful humor in games, if you guys have any examples of that. So this episode is brought to you by Steam Clock Software. The team at Steam Clock designs beautiful mobile apps, builds them, and gives them the care and feeding they deserve. Steam Clock's obsession is making great products, so if your business needs mobile product designed or developed, visit Steam Clock, that's STEAMCLOCK.com, to learn more. So obviously when we sort of talk about anything, you can do it right and you can do it wrong. Do you guys have any particular examples of a game trying to be funny and failing?
Well, one example I can think of is Baldur's Gate and Baldur's Gate 2. Now, I love these games. These are some of my favorite games, and a lot of their humor went over really, really successfully. Because I've always felt like a dialogue tree is a strong way to deliver humor, because, I mean, it's usually an optional path in this tree. And then if you don't like the joke, or you just, you know, you've read the joke, you've encountered the joke, you never have to go back to that joke again. But the game also featured sound clips where the characters would yell things as they dramatically jumped into battle. And as much as Minsk and Boo were hilarious characters, he was a brave warrior who had a hamster with him at all times. After the 100th time he yelled, I don't even remember what it was exactly that he yelled. It was something about his hamster, but he yelled it every single time.
Go for the eyes, Boo! Go for the eyes! Yell!
And it got really, really old really fast. And I think it was successful humor the first time, but it was certainly unsuccessful humor that, like, succeeding 99 times.
Yeah, he would say things like, Boo is outraged, and, like, basically generally be threatening you that his hamster was going to kill you, which the first time you're like, yeah, that's really funny. This scary guy thinks the hamster is the dangerous one, but then...
Close your eyes, Boo! Butt kicking is happening! And I was like, okay, yeah, it sure is.
Yeah, thanks. One game that I heard various accounts on the failure, or yeah, basically mostly failure, was the Duke Nukem Forever attempt at reviving the sort of classic borderline offensive or just plain offensive style of. I mean, if you go back to like Leisure Suit Larry, did either of you guys see that?
Yeah,
back when that was a thing,
at least. I think there, I don't know if there was multiple of the original ones, but I played like the very first one, but I haven't played any of the subsequent ones.
That used to be like a pretty established genre of game of the, like, even if you go back to, there was like Custer's Revenge, which was this horrible, horrible game that was basically, it was bad enough that I don't even really want to describe what it was, but it was from like the Atari in this like 1979 or something like that. But this genre of like games that are basically attempting to be humorous by being horrible or just being offensive is something that has really basically gone away. Like even the games that I'd played, what was it? Leather Goddesses of Phobos, which is roughly what you would expect. It's one of those Infocom text adventure games that was my uncle gave me a old like computer that's about as old as I was, and it had this already installed on it, and so I was playing it as a kid trying to get through it. And it was in that style partially where it was trying to be funny by being sort of risque or whatever, and that, you know, I guess part of it is the surprise that a computer game can actually do that. Was that just sort of something that was fun because, or maybe popular because it was unexpected, and then people are like, okay, yeah, we get that you can do that, or have people just kind of grown up?
I actually feel like that sort of humor, it hasn't gone away, and I don't think it'll ever go away. And in fact, I still think that the original like Duke Nukem 3D was a pretty funny game. And partially it was just like the writing was much tighter, and it was still kind of, it was puerile humor. It was very, you know, burpy, farty. Okay, here's an unexpected, you know, we can act. Actually, this takes me off into a diversion, but one of the reasons that Duke Nukem 3D, the original one, was a funny game was because it had a lot of unexpected interactions built into the game itself. You could walk into a pool hall and actually interact with the pool table. You could walk into a bathroom and actually interact with the toilet. And of course, as a, you know, 8-year-old, it's like, I flushed the toilet. But it's still like an unexpected interaction with the environment. And the unexpected interaction with the environment provided a lot of humor. On top of that, the writing for the game, while it wasn't necessarily like super clever, it was still a lot of referential humor to stuff that was really popular at the time. Things like the Evil Dead series. It created a character that was this like needlessly macho, silly character. And it was very tongue-in-cheek the entire time. It built a lot of actual solid humor into the game, and it delivered on it well. The Duke Nukem Forever game was a lot less well put together in its final form. Like, there, it's just not the same level of humor. A lot of it was just like the simplest layer of reference humor, where it's like, ha ha, here's a thing that another video game does that's kind of not fun, but we also do it wrong, so we're not going to comment on it too much. But hey, look at that! Like, it's almost like that Meet the Spartans humor, where it's just referencing something that you're both aware of and saying like, hey, the cake is a lie. Here's a funny thing. But you just remember that other funny thing. Don't actually think too hard about it, because we're going to go and shoot some stuff. Like, it's just not as well developed as a humorous it's not as well developed, and it doesn't come across as well when you're building the humor there.
I didn't play Duke Nukem Forever, but I found that even the original Duke Nukem 3D kind of missed the mark on the single player game for me in that same sort of way. As I just found the humor wasn't interesting enough. Like, it was a lot of just like, oh yeah, haha, that's funny kind of stuff, not any real genuine moments of humor. The things that I remember finding amusing in Duke Nukem 3D were all the things that we're talking about back at the beginning of how crazy some of the stuff was. Like, the shrink ray in multiplayer was a source of endless amusement in that game. But yeah, for me, the writing in the single-player game totally missed the mark. I didn't find it to be funny at all.
It's also an age difference, right? Like, Curtis and I were 10 when it came out, and you were 18 or something. So
yeah, I think that was... It was, I think, just when I started in the games industry. Yeah, actually, that's right, because the development of Duke Nukem Forever spanned my entire career in the games industry. Duke Nukem 3D was released just before I started, and Duke Nukem Forever wasn't released until after I'd left, even though those were 14 years apart, those two dates. Yeah, I can't think of any specific games that were that tried to be funny, because I really steer pretty hard away from games that are trying to be funny, other than a few adventure games like Monkey Island and Maniac Mansion and stuff like that, sort of the classic adventure games. Certainly there's lots of, like first person shooters and third person action games, which are the two genres I do really like, that have bad attempted comedy writing, particularly like not very witty banter. That's kind of a bit of an epidemic among first-person shooters, I find. Like, I can't think of any specific examples off the top of my head of like individual gags that fell flat, but I remember plenty of times playing through like the Halo games, some of the Call of Duty games, where there's just been like a bit of really forced banter between the characters that's just like, yeah, this is, they think they're being witty, but they're not.
Yeah, it's also hard when you're doing that kind of stuff, because the people who are doing the background, they often do those background and filler voice acting either later, or it's not necessarily the big stars that are doing it. And, you know, sometimes it gets rewritten or switched around because the level had to change because it wasn't fun, or it was too hard or too easy or something like that. So that stuff can be kind of unloved. And then, you know, unlike a film, the two people who are doing the scene aren't necessarily ever having met each other. So it's like, all right, respond to somebody saying this joke, and then maybe they play it for you, but it doesn't work quite the same way. unfortunately.
Yeah, and good voice acting is really crucial to good humor, because if the timing is even just a little bit off, like, it could be the funniest joke in the world. If someone is delivering it in a sort of like uninterested deadpan, it's just not going to fly. And like, good comic delivery is really rare, and I imagine in the sort of hit and miss world of video game voice acting, it's even more rare.
And importantly, it's expensive, right? Like, anything that's hard to get right is sort of another way of phrasing that, is that it's expensive. So if you say, like, okay, we can spend enough money that we're going to get people that we know are good, and then when we record it, if it just doesn't end up being funny, it's like, you know, when if you're doing theater and you're like, yeah, we have this bit and we worked it, like, you know, we've rehearsed it a bunch and we figured out how it should work, and then we do it and we put it together, and then it's like, you know what, it's actually not funny, then you have to cut it or you have to rework it. And that's something that you can potentially do in a theater show. But if you've already done all the motion capture at, you know, $50,000 a day or whatever, for this entire scene, and lit it and done everything, and it's already in the game, and then you're like, yep, it's not funny, then it's kind of, well, we're out of money. So,
well, that's too bad. Well, another thing, like Saturday Night Live, the actors of Saturday Night Live say that the sketches that they think are going to be the absolute funniest sketches of the night often get just no response. And the things that they just sort of put together, you know, one night, not even thinking that anyone would care, get crazy huge laughs. Like, they're always surprised by what actually makes people laugh. And these are people who have been doing nothing but comedy for years and years.
Nigel and I, this last week, were in a comedy, actually, a theater production that we've been working on for the last few months. And the exact same thing happened for us. Like, there were some jokes in there that I just thought were hilarious that nobody cared about. And then other parts of them, like, really? Why are they? Okay, well, I'm glad that they're laughing, but that joke I did not think was very funny. But I mean, sometimes it works better, like, you know, especially if you're playing a serious character. If your character doesn't think something's funny, they're going to take it more seriously. But if that is what's selling the joke, the fact that you're annoyed that this guy's doing this ridiculous thing, then actually can they end up being funnier.
You know what? I feel like there's something there that I'd just like to talk about briefly, which is that a really serious character or protagonist that doesn't find things funny can actually be really quite very funny. I mean, it's one argument for why sometimes I find the Grand Theft Auto games funnier than the Saints Row games. And it's because Grand Theft Auto takes itself so seriously, and then you can ruin its universe so well, that it's like, you know, it's the throwing the pie at the wealthy dowager instead of the clown. Well, throwing a pie at a clown is all well and good, but it's a clown. You can tell it's trying to be funny, and ha-ha, it got hit by a pie. You take someone serious with dignity, and you throw a pie at them, and it's much funnier. And GTA is that much more serious person, and you are throwing pies at it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Although I still protest this. I think the low point of it was GTA 4 with Nico's, like, I don't care if I live or die, and it's just the whole thing. It's, like, it's bleak. I think it went a little far, but definitely the wicked ridiculousness in the context of a serious game is fun.
I'd like to point out that I have never played the story of any of the Grand Theft Auto games. My entire MO in all of those games is just to drive around wreaking havoc for hours at a time until I get bored with it. Every single game. Vice City was my favorite.
They make that harder over time. So, like, in the earlier Grand Theft Auto games, it was easier to just wreak havoc at the beginning or early on in the game. And in just general, like, they kind of made it more in the spirit of the sandbox. I've told this story before, but in the context of, like, the newer, especially, like, the most recent one or two Grand Theft Auto games, they started doing things that sacrifice sandboxiness for forcing you through the linear story. So, like, you know, a weapon shop that sells the rockets is just not open yet until you get to a certain distance in the storyline. Or one thing that drove me crazy was there's this one, for example, as an example, this one mission that I was dying over and over again in San Andreas. And so I was like, okay, this is driving me crazy. The guy always, I go in, I try to root him out, I shoot at him, he runs away, he gets in his car, he drives away, and I can't catch him. So before I go in, after dying however many times, I shoot out all of his tires, and then I go in, I root him out, he gets in the car, and then it's kind of like, you know, squirming around the road and squealing, and it's, you know, it's on fire, and it's great, and it's funny, and it's easy, and I solved the puzzle. But then in the next game, I tried something similar on a mission that I was having a hard time on, and his car just, like, magically healed.
because I imagine someone actually filed a bug report about something that very same thing, and they're like, "Oh yeah, we should fix that."
It's not a bug; it's a feature.
Like, oh, we're breaking the narrative of the game. People are getting through this easier than they should. We need to fix it. But no, you shouldn't have fixed it. It was good the way it was.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, and most of what I enjoy about those games is not the story. I find the story sort of grating and terrible. There's really only so many times I can see some, like, what's the word? It's like the exact story from Godfather, but retold from the perspective of one of, you know, some thug that you're working with. It's like, okay, well, somebody will get big in a crime family and eventually, like, oh, he's popular, but sad. I don't care even a little bit about that story. I want to drive around with a tank. I want to find the tank, and then I want to drive around with it. And in Vice City, I found out that there was a glitch in the game. If I flipped the tank's barrel around and shot behind me, it had been designed in such a way that you were supposed to be driving forward, and you'd shoot, and it would apply like a small vector of speed. It would slow you down a little bit, but it slowed you down a fixed amount. So if you're driving forward and shooting behind you, it would speed you up a fixed amount every time with no maximum speed. So you could just plow down a highway at like incredible sports car speeds in a tank.
In this tank, shooting backwards and destroying what's behind you.
And destroying everything behind you, and then you'd hit a jump. And something about that tank like gloriously flying through the air and then landing on some unsuspecting person made me giggle in fits every single time I did it. Like, that's a humor repetition that I could have done, you know, 10, 15 times and laugh at it every single time, because I still think it's pretty funny.
Yeah, that definitely seems to be what they've embraced with. I'm not 100% sure the Goat Simulator is a GTA Engine game, but it looks like it is. I don't know if they... Now that I say that, I'm no longer convinced they even licensed that engine, but it looks... like, and sounds even kind of like a GTA game, except that the main character is a goat and that you just go around and you can headbutt things and eat things, and I think you can lick things, and then basically generally wreak havoc and ruin things as a goat. But the trailer for the release trailer for the game is a spoof on, and maybe I won't ruin it, but it's a spoof on another trailer that was a very maybe serious trailer from like a year or two ago. That they've done in like slow motion with this goat and there's explosions, and it's very much obviously understanding that there's more fun sometimes to be had with whatever the player will try to do rather than anything. There's no story to the game at all. It's just a sandbox for ridiculous.
Go forth and wreak havoc. Although I watched a playthrough of Goat Simulator, and it's almost a little bit what's the word? The throwing pies at the clown thing, where the game itself is trying so hard to be funny that anything you do to sort of break the game in weird ways just doesn't feel as satisfying.
As opposed to, if all the, like, what they would want is that the world that the goat is in is serious, but the goat is wreaking havoc, maybe?
Yeah. And I mean, still the world is pretty serious, but there's a lot of, like, hidden humor zones where you're just like, okay, well, this world was designed to be pretty ridiculous from the get-go. And this goat has pretty, like, hilarious goat powers that seem a little out of place. And it's like the game is trying really pretty hard to be a sandbox where you will do wacky and unusual things. And that's the entirety of the game, which is, I mean, it just almost takes some of the fun out of it, just because what you want to do is you want to take something that someone has made a serious experience and sabotage it. You don't want to take something that's made a like funny experience and just interact with it the way that it was designed. Maybe this is just because I'm sort of a natural troll, but... It's
well, Saints Row 4 actually almost nailed that. Well, they did nail it for the first like 3 minutes of the game, which was that, okay, what's the most serious thing you can possibly think of? Being the president of the United States. Like, that's a pretty serious thing. So the game opens like, all right, you're the president of the United States. You're in the White House. You like the very first decision you're asked to make is like, do you want to cure cancer or world hunger? And you're like, yeah, I'll cure world hunger. Okay, great. I'm like, and then, you know, so you're basically put into the circumstance where you're a ridiculous character wreaking havoc on a world is taking itself very seriously, and then within like 3 or 4 minutes the aliens come and it goes all ridiculous. But well, I think that's a good coverage of our topic, unless I've missed out a crucial element of it. But I think that's good coverage of our topic, so thanks a lot for coming on the show, Curtis. Thanks to everybody for listening. We enjoy doing the show, but we need your feedback to make it great. So if you did or did not like the show, please tell us why. Either send us an email at hello@upup.fm or leave a review on iTunes. See you next week. So they took the Kinect out of the Xbox.
Did they?
The Xbox. Yeah, that's the thing of the day.
I don't know about that. That seems a little weird, but.
Well, the thing that sucks about that is that everyone who has bought a Kinect is now losing out, because any developer who is like, well, let's make something that supports Kinect because it's on every single Xbox One as of June 1st, I believe, then they're going to start selling them for $100 less without the Kinect. And then that's suddenly going to be immediately going to be the most popular box that people buy. So I wouldn't say they killed the Kinect, but it's basically relegated back to the same status as it was.
Well, yeah, I mean, maybe it was already dead. Like, maybe just looking at what stuff was being released for it and how people were using it and stuff like that, they just know that, yeah, it's not catching on. But yeah, it definitely does seem a bit weird to commit so heavily to something like that and then just give up on it. But I mean, clearly Microsoft's taking a bit of a beating on that right now. So probably getting $100 off the price is going to make a difference.
Imagine like the poor developer that is staking, you know, millions of dollars on a Kinect game, expecting that it's going to be on, you know, all of the devices for the next 2 years. And oh, no, actually, that's not the case. So, well, too bad.
I mean, it certainly seems like the motion control craze is kind of starting to burn itself out a little bit. Like, you know, there definitely aren't the wealth of like sports and fitness oriented titles that there were on certainly on the Wii and then on Kinect when it, you know, when it came out for the Xbox 360 and stuff like that. Like that trend seems to kind of be burning itself out. So maybe games that really need the Kinect to even work at all just don't sell well enough. And then, you know, most of the other like cool uses of the Kinect that I've heard about are like the voice control stuff. I mean, that sounds like it had the potential to be something really cool, but that's definitely something that would need to be optional even if you knew you had a Kinect everywhere, right? You couldn't say, oh, we're going to make a like squad-based shooter where the only way to give commands to your squad is by voice control, because like that would just be a disaster even if everything had a Kinect. There's got to be a fallback. So
but people are talking into headsets anyway often with that, aren't they, rather than into the Kinect mic?
Yeah, I mean any mic can enable that to happen. You don't need a $100 piece of equipment for people to be able to talk to the system. And that sort of gameplay where people like speak commands to the game itself has been tried and has been like relegated to the trash heap of history. These are some of the most awful games ever made, and it's just like, do not go there. And also, I just a little while ago I saw a video online of someone who had taken the name Xbox Sign Out and was playing games on the Xbox with other people, and they'd say, oh, why is your name Xbox Sign Out? Wait, no, stop, no, don't sign out.
Nice.
They just make that. That's pretty good trolling, actually.
It was a glorious moment for me. I very much enjoyed watching that video.
I've definitely heard a couple times of people dying in games because they accidentally gave a command to the Xbox that they weren't trying to.
But honestly, I feel like, I mean, calling motion control a trend is being too generous with it. It's a fad. It should not even get the trend status. It was like it was a 2 or 3 year fad brought on by the Wii motion control until everyone figured out that there's not actually a whole lot that people like to do with their arms while they're playing video games because it's such a wobbly and imprecise control method.
You don't use the PlayStation Move controller on a daily basis?
I do, but not for its intended purpose. I'm not sure if I necessarily want to discuss what I end up doing with it, but based on its shape.
So colorful. Yeah, I think maybe that's the beginning of the end of that. We'll see. Or maybe it just ends up being like one of those many things that goes into devices. Like when Bluetooth first came out, everyone was like, the whole world, everything will be Bluetooth. It's going to like take over everything. And then now it's just like one of the many little microchips that's in every device we have that gets used every once in a while, but mostly just kind of sits there.
Motion might find its niche, but like ultimately the sort of games that ended up coming out of it were really, really simple, basic motion games, dance and exercise and not a lot else. And I feel like maybe there's a space for it once people start getting into territory where buttons are not quite as immersive. Like, I feel like the Oculus Rift might end up being the saving grace of some of these motion-based systems, just because it puts you in a context where operating buttons is a little less comfortable, and so giving you an alternative system to interact with the game that's more comfortable might actually rescue these systems from the trash heap of history, because as it stands right now, they're certainly not doing much.
I've been playing FTL in the last couple nights, staying up later than I guess that's generally what one of those roguelike simulation semi-grindy type games are going to do, is make you stay up past midnight unexpectedly, or past one as it was last night. But it was Angelina's suggestion a couple of shows ago to pick it up, and it is pretty fun as long as you set your, so it's available for iPad, which makes it nice. It's just a sitting on the couch kind of playing around type of game. But something you have to take into mind when you start playing it that's not obvious, that it is from, does descend from like that rogue type of mentality where you're going to create a ship and create some characters and you're going to name them and you get attached to them, and then they're going to die a horrible death for no particularly good reason, and that's going to repeat. So you have to kind of have that mentality in mind.
I find that I can like some of those games, but it depends on how arbitrary the deaths feel. I didn't like Faster Than Light just because the deaths felt a little too arbitrary for my tastes, but I really liked Spelunky because while the deaths felt arbitrary, each time I died, I felt like I learned a really valuable lesson about like not standing underneath that man's mouth while I pulled the golden idol up, because a rock would fall on my head and kill me. It's like, okay, well, even though that's a little like a little weird, a little ambiguous, I probably couldn't have guessed that that was going to happen. Just based on the golden idol sitting on a pedestal, I probably could have used like emotional contextual clues to at least take a guess at it, maybe just be on my guard. Stuff like stealing from the shopkeep. You know something bad is going to happen, but you don't know exactly what, and you want to kind of experiment with it. And then you steal something from the shopkeep and he shoots you in the face and you're like, well, I deserved that. Like, there's a certain amount of, you can't know exactly how things are going to go down, but when you die, you still feel like you deserved it. Whereas a lot of times in Faster Than Light, I died and I felt like it was just sort of, well, next time I'll learn not to not be able to find any fuel for three planets in a row.
And then you just get stranded. And I'm looking at I hadn't seen this Spelunky before. It looks like it's a platformer, like with a sort of Indiana Jones RPG type feel.
There's really no RPG to it. It's a roguelike platformer where you sort of platform further and further down this randomly generated dungeon full of just death traps upon death traps upon death traps. And you have almost no life to speak of, and everything kills you. And when you die, you start up again at the top. And you can collect objects in the dungeon that slightly increase your chance of living longer. But more or less, it's just a bunch of things that kill you in interesting and exciting ways. And once you've been killed by just about everything in the dungeon, that's most of the game right there. I mean, it's just sort of like, it's a bunch of interesting ways to die with the game wrapped around it. But it's funny, and I found it really enjoyable. And it's also really fun to play with a group of people, because then you trigger the traps almost accidentally, just because managing four people in a dungeon that complicated and likely to kill you will lead to someone dying on every floor in a funny way.
Have you seen this thing, Super Time Force? It's a game that's been sort of going around in the last couple of days. It's a similar game, and it's a platformer that you die really, really easily, and it's time limited. You have to beat each level in 60 seconds. But the interesting mechanic is that when you die, or optionally whenever you like, you can rewind as far as you want back through the level and pick another member of your team, and that member of your team will pick up to the point that you rewinded, and then the ghost of your previous playthrough will play with you and fight enemies and solve puzzles and things like that.
Interesting. So does the ghost go along the original path that you went along?
Yeah, it does whatever you just did. And sometimes that might just be run up on a platform and then stand there and like just shoot mobs that are just coming and flying at you. Just shoot them and shoot them and shoot them and shoot them and shoot them. And then that means that since, you know, previous life you is doing that, then when they eventually die and then you come back and try to like open a door or do some other thing, then you can survive because your previous you is fighting off the bad guys or whatever.
I actually remember playing a Flash game that had that that same concept behind it. Every time you died or every time you pressed a button, it would like kill you instantly, but all of the shadows of your previous playthroughs just existed in the level and you had to sort of interact around them. And I remember some of the solutions were literally things like just create a mountain of your corpses and walk up it to the victory.
That's awesome.
There's another game coming out sometime soon. I can't remember the name of it. I'm gonna have to hunt it down. That's the same idea, but like a 3D puzzle game, like something sort of not Portal-esque because there's no portals in it, but the same sort of like slightly sterile environment, and you're either you are a robot or you're like driving some sort of mech that also has the ability to travel through time, so you can solve puzzles by doing something and then jumping back in time and using previous you's actions to help current you do stuff. I don't know whether there's something about that gameplay mechanic that, you know, it's finally hit some critical mass, but it's certainly an interesting idea. Like, I don't think I've played any games that use that yet, but I'm definitely intrigued by that as a gameplay mechanism.
We've at least played Super Meat Boy, where it just shows you your previous people at the end of, like, just how bad you were and how many times you died.
That's always been the most entertaining part of Super Meat Boy for me. I don't actually really enjoy how difficult that game is, but whenever I get to a level, it's just so satisfying to watch all those little meats die.
And I love seeing when, like, you get, like, three or four, you know, jumps you successfully make, and there's the one that you died on like 100 times, and so you see like 100 little meats go like jump, jump, blah, they all die at once. It's awesome.